Lost my heart and hope to die. If I ever, ever told a lie, feelings and guilty just said, choose a bad place when you're dead. Washington, he never lied.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, But a Fanfic, the fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with Weird. Say hello, Weird.
You were confronted this week with a contrite Sir Weirdington, Esquire. Though not contrite enough to fail to malign you for not getting my full and proper title. I'm a little bit contrite because starting our recap this week, last week I did a mocking voice implying the people I regard as my interlocutors, intellectual inferiors, suffer implicitly some sort of cognitive defect or developmental disability. And I wanted to rush into whatever it was I was talking about, and so I kind of didn't acknowledge the request to sort of cut that out or do that a lot less. It's galled me how dismissive I was, or at least came across. And I wanted to take some time to fully acknowledge, out the gate, as soon as possible, fully acknowledge the complaint and say that, it's not super great.
Yeah, swing the chair around, put a foot up. Hey, kids, we have a lot of fun here. But, remember that you probably shouldn't do ableist jokes on podcast because that's recorded forever and it ages poorly.
Particularly when it goes against praxis, goes against your general values.
Yeah,
I will in the future continue to mock and disparage people I think are trying to destroy the world and ruin everything with incredibly ill ill-motivated bad arguments. I'll endeavor to paint them more as fucking babies than people with cognitive
developmental issues. Yeah.
Yeah.
A la dumb guy voice.
Yeah. So I might still do it, but I will endeavor to do it in a higher register, to imply I think you're being a child.
Yeah, and I think you are being dumb. With that out of the way, what did we learn last week, though, outside of that?
That was the only thing that happened. It was a very short cast last week.
Also, they fell down an elevator and died.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you can just do the recap this week, I guess, and you just did. The entire cast fell down an elevator and died, and so I guess we're doing an epilogue for the series. Okay, I guess I have to try and be more serious and actually do it, but that requires thinking about it. Let's be innovative this week. Let's reverse engineer what the fuck happened, starting at the end where they all fell down an elevator and died, and the series is over. But before that, unfortunately, not all of them died. It was only Blackjack and, I guess, Rampage were the only two that were still there to fall down the elevator. Because on the way in, they contracted, they were poisoned by magic vines called Killing Joke. Wherein Jared Leto stalks you to the ends of the earth.
You get a damaged tattoo on your forehead.
So anyway, it's a dumb, edgy retake on itchy joke,
poison joke.
poison joke, a poison ivy that gives you an ironic affliction. But because it's edgy, it kills you.
Yes.
Fuck. Somber does something kind of likely that absolutely no one could survive with Pocket Horse, the baby horse in Blackjack's inventory, starts breathing chlorine. Which means that there's like magic, whatever. She's teleported away by the Alicorn, and they take Glory with them. And Glory has meanwhile been turned into Rainbow Dash.
Yes.
We said a little bit about that last podcast, so go ahead and give a listen to that one if you want to hear any more talk about it, because I'm saving all of the vomit in my guts for later on that. Like, I'm sure there's plenty of opportunities to be real mad about how dumb that is at another time. In the meantime, I get to be more mad about the fact that Somber gave Blackjack a curse to, like, everything that she touches other than the ground every few seconds will explode. And then just stop doing it. And I quote, because the curse decided it wasn't funny enough. Because she was able to use it to her advantage, and also she's a telekinetic, so it's not like she has much call to touch things most of the time anyway. And if it were an actual curse that were actually funny and dangerous, then it would also carry over into her telekinesis, which would be really amazingly darkly hilarious. I'm like...
Explodokinesis.
Yeah. The comedy potential is endless. Like, it is difficult for her to even feed herself.
My oats keep exploding.
It's so funny that I actually made an offhand joke last week that, like, I thought was pretty good. Of like, all right, well, I found my pit buck with the secret data in it. Can somebody get that for me?
Yeah. Can't touch it or explodes.
The most totally extreme case of Midas, mitotosis. Anyway, yeah, but Somber just went, meh. Bored with this now. I'm very dumb. So I can't do anything with this, so it just isn't anymore.
Things rarely, like, it just doesn't, like, things rarely have consequences if they, like, you can't have anything that matters, because, like, that way it would impede the character from being able to do things. So, like, consequences either have to be, like, deeply emotionally traumatic or just not at all. Like, remember how Blackjack's a robot now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's barely come up. Like, there's little bits of it, like her having like Terminator eyes and shit like that, but like there hasn't been a whole ton yet.
That recontextualize everything she meets and everyone she talks to as a target.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a better story, her cyberfication would be the beginning of the story, and it would be like the nightmare of adapting to being a robot weapon. But, like, you know, whatever.
Okay. Going further back in time, they're in this forest because they think they can track Sanguine here.
They get told his base of operations is here, yeah.
Yeah, they have to go through a spooky forest that's been poisoned by mutagen. basically. It is in all ways the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles goop.
But rainbow.
But pink.
It's rainbow.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. It turns out Pocket Horse has her own Metal Gear Solid inventory, in which she keeps a tiny dragon horse.
Yes, named Precious.
Who everyone had been rightly assuming was imaginary up to this point, and then revealed themselves for reasons unknown and likely ill-considered. Before that point, I don't know, we meet a bunch of Greed from Full Metal Alchemist friends, like, I guess, who I guess are the source of the, like, lead on going into the spooky forest to find a spooky bad guy base.
Mm-hmm.
And Blackjack yells at one of them, kind of a dick, and blowing up like that is why she got the very temporary blow things up power.
That was basically the chapter in reverse.
Yeah, okay.
Very little happened in the beginning, and then, like, they fought some trees.
Oh, yeah, something almost... that was actually remotely clever, is that it turns out, like, they're just trees. They don't have, like, motive. They were responding to your initial violence, trying to rush through them by clearing them out with fire.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe stop doing that.
Don't.
If Somber were the sort of coward who used themes and subtext, like, maybe that would be a larger, like, thing that could carry on to the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm.
That evil begets. Oh, I forget the rest. I'm sure it's not important.
It's amazing to think that the series does have themes, but yeah, I think that wraps it up. And it's not you didn't end up with a half an hour of conversation on it because really nothing happened in the last chapter.
Yep.
I've told this many times before in this pod, but that's like a really consistent thing about this series is that like every other chapter is like a cool off chapter where they go to do something. And then they do a thing in the next chapter, and then the next chapter is them like reeling from that decision or action, which makes for like a really slow series. Like I can see why this was 77 chapters. If like every single time something happens in your series, we have to spend another chapter like decompressing about it every single time. No wonder this thing is a million and a half words. Oh god, this thing is a million and a half words. It's just washed over me like a fucking like nightmare.
There's only one way to work through it, and that's to work through it. Let's...
So, anyways, yeah, moving on to chapter 38, Blood. I was wrong about who stepped onto the elevator. Elevator. It was only Blackjack. Only Blackjack was stupid enough to get on the rickety elevator before it fell. We get some... Luckily, since she's a robot horse, she lives through a falling elevator. And,
she doesn't Mega Man her way up the, up the shaft.
Oh, that'd have been cool.
And therefore, inconceivable to appear in the story.
Things cool happening? No way. But yeah, she's in the wreckage of the elevator, and she basically, like, her friends, like, call down, like, "Hey, Blackjack, you still alive down there?" And she's like, "I'm good, just a little crumpled." And she just kind of just...
Ah, shit. Well...
She basically tells them to, like, go find a different way down.
I mean, remind, like, who is at the top of the shaft?
P-21 and Rampage, which is a consistent thing that I've noticed a lot, that usually they're the only people that ever actually, like, participate in, like, set pieces. Like, the last time that, like, the last like when they fought the Rangers, they only, like the Steel Rangers, it was only 21 Rampage and BJ that time as well. And it's just, it's like, a, like I don't even think it's like a negative or anything. It's just a weird, like, consistent thing that usually, like, Glory could do things, but, like, is often, like, fridged for no reason. But anyways, along the way, Blackjack starts seeing weird ghostly visions of, like, people down here.
Oh, this is all, this is just a fucking isolator. So, okay.
Yeah.
So that if anything happens, she's the only one who will respond to it.
Yeah.
Okay, I was wondering, like, I was, yeah, no, that explains it. I mean, that's why, like, Rampage doesn't do something, like,
Rampage isn't my just brain jump. Immediately. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, what, why? and even if, like, even if the reason she didn't just, like, you know, jump down, because, you know, why? like, consequences are for mortals. Surely there's like a loose cable up here that she could have like rappelled down.
Yeah.
Burn scars on her hands be damned. like picked P-21 up and just rappelled down.
Yeah. or just land, just fell and just be like, all right, 21, now jump. Use me as a soft landing. I'll catch you. And even if I don't, just hit me. Oh man, I want that now. Like I need to
and
draw.
Honestly,
that.
You wouldn't be missed anyway.
Well, like no, like I like the I like the idea though that like of Rampage is like, well, what are you gonna do? You're gonna land on me and kill me? Like, oh well. like using your immortal friend.
Or
as
like
a...
yeah, just grabbing him and like negotiate and using. Many centuries of gymnastic cultivation to make sure that like her fall like cushions it for,
or not even just grabbing 21 and just jumping and then just taking the whole brunt on her legs and be like, well, that fucking hurt, but we're down here.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! Her legs are broken.
Yeah.
God.
She could be a cool character.
Let me write your story like, for you, son.
Yeah, like the I think the real key to like P-21 is just channeling like some of the basic elements of the fucking I'm sure I've seen others in the yeah, I was about to suggest maybe like a deeply unstable Time Lord, like but no, like I think Deadpool and moreover Team Four Stars take on Alucard and Helsing Abridged is sort of the model for like the wildly dangerous, completely indestructible,
yep.
immortal monster. Like,
that does not.
What would Alucard do in this situation?
Kill.
Yeah, this is just. Not even like jump is too much. Like just step forward. Like just walk in.
She starts seeing ghost visions, which I think is literally just because like Sombra has gotten tired of doing memory orbs. Now that Blackjack is one quarter orb, she starts seeing ghost visions of the like people that used to work here. It's very very system shocky. Like they're just seeing like overlays of spooky ghosts and fuck, this plot point's dumb. The entirety of this chapter is intercut with basically one of the Ministry mayors and main characters of the original thing, Twilight Sparkle, is investigating this building because she needs the research for something because she's developing a apocalypse survival strategy that requires biological mutation, and this is the place to get that information. But her problem is that the material that they use for biological mutation flux doesn't make any sense. There's no way they could be producing it. Like she can't figure out how that's working because she's poured over all of their documents and insists on that they have there's something that they have to be doing something besides what they say to making it. And it's a big mystery in this chapter, which would be interesting, except also Golden Blood is here to be all main character OC. Like, he literally walks up and Twilight's like, hey, you've been, like, the OIA has been disbanded and you've been, like, blacklisted as a director. And he just, like, ignores her, basically. Just like, oh, well, that doesn't really matter. Because of course it doesn't matter. Because of course he's, like, the Machiavellian villain that has all the connections and all the main power behind the throne, and it's never mattered whether or not he was actually official or not, because of course. And he also just like nonchalantly just like drops exactly what Twilight's like plan is, which, you know, supposed to be a huge government blacklisted ultra security project, but of course he just knows, because of course he does. But Twilight's trying to survive the apocalypse by making alicorns. That's her big thing. She's creating a chemical that can turn regular horses into alicorns, because alicorns can survive the apocalypse is what she's convinced of. Basically turn the whole species into the Ubermensch and just ignore the apocalypse that way. He also just defeats her with just effortless logic and reason. And it's really, really annoying. I hate this Ben Shapiro horse. But anyways, BJ stops hallucinating that long enough to have a conversation with a robot named Old Hank, who's just like a, howdy, I'm a country boy hospitality robot, that she talks for a little while. And the only real point of this conversation is...
Who's the asshole who installed Chuck E. Cheese joke insert here? Can't think of it. In secret, like, secret crime lab? Like, secret, like,
he's the janitor, like, don't you know? Yeah. Yeah. He's only really here to explain that, like, apparently all the robots in the Hoof have been getting, like, orders from the core, like, core command, as he refers to it as. So it's like the center of the city, like, is rating out a signal for robots to be activated, but it's being countermanded by the signal to also deactivate. So somewhere in the core there is a light switch that is just all the robots on that's getting and all the robots off that's getting flicked over and over again by two competing forces that we don't know yet. But it's just really amusing to me to think about, like, robots just, like, on, off. Like, all the lights are getting flicked on and off, but it's all, like, all the machinery in a building as well.
It's really bad for a hard drive, I hear.
But luckily he doesn't get to chew the scenery too much, because he then turns evil and Blackjack beats him to death with her robot legs.
Okay, well, now I'm reminded of, what was it, Bob and George? Like, one of the, like, original web comics. And like, the first sprite comic on record. They had sort of a running gag of, like, okay, who's evil this season? and the last time it came up was that, like, they eventually did a joke where all of the robots in the cast had a good evil switch on their back, except for Bass, who had evil and stupid.
Yeah, oh no, you switched me for evil.
And I think that was the last time the joke ever, like, it remained canon, but I think the last time the joke ever came up was, like, Bass going, aha, now's my time to green. That wall is green.
That's pretty good. Anyways, a lot of this is taken up with a lot of, like, dry descriptions of moving through a dilapidated building and Blackjack fighting mutants. Like, specifically these weird, like, all-white albino mutant monster horses for a long while. That isn't terribly exciting. She does get to fight him with her cool katana, though, so that's neat, I guess.
Katana.
It's certainly not like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's not described in any particular detail outside of sword a lot of the time. But I mean, like, given the like this author's like
it's being written like yeah this is a self-indulgent fanfic by a reactionary asshole. It can't not be a katana.
It's a magic star metal katana that can cut through any material.
if it weren't a katana, like we know it is definitely katana, because if it weren't, it would have gone on for like a page and a half about how a Zweihander is so much better than
it's a fucking dyclave. Anyways, we get more ghosts of horse past, of just Twilight going through the facility more, arguing with Golden Blood. True Blood is there, which is Sanguine's actual name, so this is because this is the place he used to work before the bombs hit. It's just a bunch of him being dangerous.
Oh my god.
What?
So like Golden Blood is just a nickname that he insists.
No.
Like,
Golden Blood is
his government job, like call him.
No. There's Golden Blood, and then there's also Dr. True Blood, which is his cousin, which is Sanguine. Gold Blood is still right, gotcha. Another character. Don't worry, we haven't met him yet. We haven't met him in the story yet. Cause of course we are. He's been hyped up so much we can't possibly not meet him. But so they're all going on a merry chase to figure out how Flux is getting made. BJ finds a emaciated albino horse that isn't evil. That's just like I say albino, but like it's actually like completely white. Like their eyes are white. Their eye color is white. Their hair is white. Their fur is white. Whatever. Like everything about them is white. But they seem to have some level of survival instinct as opposed to these giant mutants. And
what's the name of that horse, Braden? Appaloosa?
Sorry?
Never mind. Please continue.
It's Cremello, by the way. Is the closest horses can get to albino.
Hmm.
Where they're just all like they don't have the red eye thing, they have blue eyes instead. Anyways. she feeds her snack cakes to like keep her around and she's a character. BJ fights some more mutants, which makes a bunch of noise. And this is when Fury, the like exploding horse that cannot die, appears.
Wait, hold on. We do need to reel back a bit because we met a genetically modified albino who like I'm afraid all of those poor any ponies were set to death. I however offer only cake.
Well, no, she was she.
Can you tell us anything about this facility? No, only cake.
Well, no, she can't talk, and BJ's feeding her cakes to like.
Okay, so she's now in the inventory, or
she's the animal companion. She's basically a dog. For a huge chunk of this story. This character is the most beloved in the whole fan base, and I don't understand why. It's because she's adorable, and that's really annoying. But before that, she meets up with Fury, who is the exploding horse that does not care. And I actually like really like her, and it's a shame that she's about to die, because like BJ fights her for a while, is like taking shots out of her and throwing explosives at her and hitting her with stuff, and Fury is just like basically like, don't you get it, you stupid idiot, I can't die. Like she's just making fun of her the whole time, for even trying to fight her.
So she doesn't merely like project explosive force in all directions. She actually detonates like from the inside.
Yeah. She's a phoenix is her thing. Like she's another chimera, so she's a phoenix. So when she explodes, she just explodes into ash, and then ash like reconstitutes into a person, or into a horse in this case. But eventually BJ figures out the trick to her is that like since she has an ash state like phoenixes have, that ash state can be fucked with. So she like luckily gets smashed into a emergency fire hose for office safety, and just like kills her with a fire hose by like spraying the particulate matter of Fury out of a spot, and it fucks with her, and then she just like Like, it's kind of grisly in the way it's described, in that, like, when she reconstitutes from the ash, every time, like, BJ sprays parts of her out of her, she's, like, missing physical chunks out of her when she, like, reconstitutes, which just, like, forces her to, like, detonate again over and over and over again until she just, like, burns herself out. But, like, so that's cool and all, I guess, but, like, it also just feels like one of those things where, like, did a rainy day not kill her then at some point? Like, how did she live for so long? And also, she's also surprised about this weakness about herself as well, that she can even die at all. And, like, a key thing to know about this setting is it rains all the fucking time, because the fucking Enclave is keeping the cloud cover up all the time because they need to live on it. So it rains so regularly and so heavily in places, especially the Hoof. Like, how did she not fall apart? And I guess that's a nitpick of, like, plot inconsistency and whatever. That's not, like,
I'm pretty whatever about it. If it were at all interesting, she might do a Koshe of the Deathless, wherein, like, one of the premises of the mythological Koshe, or later interpolations, if Koshe, like, has hidden his soul in an object somewhere else in the world, and so his body will always reconstitute no matter what you do to it. But it seems, based on the ending of one of his major stories, if you beat him into a fine paste and then burn it, it'll be a while before the, like, and scatter the ashes. Like, he'll still reconstitute eventually again, but it'll take him a while.
Yeah. I think I'm just mostly just disappointed because I, like this character, and it's kind of just a bummer. Like, it's a kind of... So I think what it is I wanted Rampage to beat her because I think it's a more compelling fight. Like, that's a better matchup, I think, of, like...
Yeah, but people who aren't Blackjack aren't allowed to...
Do anything, yeah.
Express agency.
Yeah. But that's my biggest sticking point, is I like...
Which is, again, I think is the main reason why fucking, Slaughter Shy, Psycho Shy, is still alive, or at least still has their face.
It's because they haven't been beaten by Blackjack specifically? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because no character besides Blackjack has, like, personal agency. Like, Rampage was therefore not capable of performing an action that would, like, meaningfully change the world around.
Yeah.
I
guess I just, like, I guess what I would have wanted at a Fury is to just sort of, like, just get bored of this whole situation. Like, she seems to be really, like, uninterested in this, and they're just kind of, like, her just coming to the realization of, like, oh yeah, Sanguine's never gonna fix me, is he? I don't really care about this anymore. Bye. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
just bored of the situation. Bored of the, like...
Because the story is really big on second chances and redemption arcs, even if they're not done very well. You could even just have her be like, you know what, I don't really care about wanting to fight you, and I don't really... Like, she just doesn't seem... She seems, like, more apathetic than Rampage is about everything that's happening, so, like, her just being like, bye, I'm just gonna go join the Finders or something, fucking whatever. I'm gonna go be a napalm bomb somewhere else.
And before we, like, move on to the, and then, the next thing that happens in a series of things, poor Phoenix Horse turned out to be nothing but filler anyway.
Yeah.
like her complete removal from the story wouldn't change any events.
No, not even slightly.
One last thing. Fun creative thing that could have been done with Rampage is, like, I see that you leave behind a residue every single time. How much of that ash do you need to reconstitute? What do you mean? Another fight, another explosion, kill. Just start scooping it up and, like, eating it.
Just eats it. Oh, God. What could have been? Anyways, we move on to Blackjack moving through more of the facility. She ends up in, like, a train depot that's underneath the building that goes through the subway system, because that's how Sanguine's been getting through. She decides to name the name gets tossed out about what these things are. These albinos, they're called blanks, because they also don't have cutie marks as well. They're just, like, a complete blank. She decides to name the the blank that's following around or following her around Boo because she's spooked by everything. She is essentially a dog as far as the story is concerned for a huge chunk of it, because she can't speak and she can only like, she's basically a feral child that's just like wandering around with Blackjack now. She's another person added to the party that adds virtually nothing except for like side bullshit.
What's she called again?
Boo.
Okay.
Yep. Her only good trait is she's basically immune to like, she's immune to the rainbow gunk, the flux, like it just doesn't do anything to her. So she can move through parts of this facility without it being like dangerous.
So a secondary mascot.
Yes.
Perhaps trinary mascot, because the initial mascot had their own mascot.
I was gonna say Scotch isn't really a mascot. She's Blackjack too. She's
okay. So auxiliary mascot. Auxiliary protagonist. With mascot. So now primary and primary protagonist has mascot.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. I don't want to think about it. I'm done.
just don't.
So, what is the next event?
They go into this and they find out that like that some of Red Eye's Griffins are still working for Sanguine. Well, they're not working for him. What they're doing is they're shipping blanks through the tunnel system to Philadelphia, which is the like is Red Eye's home base. Because Red Eye needs slaves. He already has tons of slaves, so I don't know why this plot point. It's not a super important plot point, but it's just a thing that... It's a thing that stuck out with me, because we get name-dropped the, like, Goliath, which is the, like, guy that was dragging around a train car in a previous chapter, carrying supplies that get said to Red Eye, and it's revealed that the supplies are blanks that are being used for a slave force because they don't fight back. They have no emotions, really. This will work indefinitely. So the perfect slave force. And I hate that that's a plot point that Goliath never comes back up in the story, and neither does his mother. But, like, realistically, Blackjack should have tracked down and murdered those people. given how she has a weird thing. Like, she's supposed to hate slavers, but, like, that's really on and off when that matters.
I mean, like most of her character traits, it like
it's
not an actual like facet.
Yeah.
The only thing that is consistent about Blackjack is that she's a fucking cop who like craves to murder people. Like the only thing that is consistent in Blackjack's characterization throughout the story so far is that she is destined to become a firearm of a person.
I would also like say that she also has the regular problem of also moralizing a lot of her murder, which is also worrying.
Which is also very a cop.
Yes. I think it's important to mention to people, like, hey, we don't like cops. This is part of the reason why. For people listening. BJ then like gets wind that Brass is down here. Brass is that like weird.
Oh wait, metacord. Shit! No, that might explain it. In the like, she's very keen on she's very against slavery. When there is a slaver easily to hand to do violence to.
Mm-hmm. But when it's like a whole system, like
then it's hard, and so and doesn't like. Requires solutions beyond just like brute violence, and so no longer stands as an easy justification to
for violence.
You know, hurt people.
Yeah.
Like.
But anyways, Blackjack runs into Brass, who's the Manticore pony hybrid, who's just evil for the sake of being evil, basically. Like there's a Narmi part where Blackjack asks, like, do you really want to do this with your life? And she's basically like, yes, I want to be evil. I don't want to cure cancer. I want to turn people into dinosaurs. Like, it's such a, like... I want to kill people with manticores. That's all I want. I want to be a big evil monster. But we do get a pretty wicked ass dumb slobberknocker fight that I enjoy. Because I'm a big fan of slobberknockers in general, of just, like, where there isn't, like, a boring-ass tactical gunfight, and it just people kicking the shit out of each other.
Are 21 and Rampage still trying to get off the first floor?
Yes.
Meanwhile?
Yes.
God damn.
Blackjack gets a so important things to note about Blackjack. Like in this chapter, Blackjack masters her like hand mode on her hooves, so she can now like use her fingers at will. And another detail about her is that like, because her robo legs were built for a zebra, allows her to stand bipedal, which only exists. Yeah, this for this ridiculous scene. Zebras can be bipedal in this universe. It's just a thing. It's not worth going into too much depth about. Don't think about how horses can't actually do that. Don't think about how zebras can't actually do that. It's important to remember these aren't real horses. It also doesn't make any sense in Blackjack's case because her hip bones weren't roboticized, so that doesn't make any sense. But whatever, zebras can be bipedal for a short amount of time, like bipedal in like the way a bear can, I guess, where it can like walk on its hind legs for a little while. But this just exists so that Blackjack can have a katana fight against Brass, which like I don't hate, as stupid as it is. Like, it hits the, like, right kind of campy, stupid, right there. You're gonna be okay.
God! Okay. Yeah, no, just keep going. Just...
you don't want to elaborate on what the hell you're freaking out about, because... I think the
it couldn't be more early 2000s Flash, like it couldn't be more like Newgrounds. Of course, they just have a bipedal katana. God damn it! God damn it! And I'm also flashing back to like when this fucking whole season of My Little Pony came out and revitalized the franchise. One of the like main sort of edicts, like one of the main sort of creative directives was like, in the previous cartoon, the creators eventually just gave up on the conceit that they're horses and like everyone was just a biped because like they eventually got lazy. And like one of the like early things they insisted on is like, no, we want it to remain consistent that these are ponies, and so we will like go out of our way to make sure that they have hooves and like travel quadrupedally.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even think they really managed to succeed that conceit in the original.
I mean, naturally, yeah. Like especially with the excess of seasons.
Not even the excess of seasons. Like even in the first couple of seasons, there's still a lot of them. Like, I don't think it really matters that much. Like, I think the idea of having...
No, it doesn't. It was just a minor gripe, but, like, the
well, I was going to say this, the...
Totally rad Newgrounds, like, stick battle Flash.
I like stick battle fights, though. Okay.
The way that they would be inserted into something like this, like that part five of what was initially like a one-off like parody, like My Little Pony parody,
is now become its own beast. Well, the thing I will actually say about this is that as cool and dumb as the scene, I think the scene is because it is this big ridiculous slobber knocker of characters taking chunks of each other, and there's like a lot of actual engagement in this scene. The thing I will also say about this is I warned about this before. After BJ is baptized and roboticized, the story really stops being what it was, which was a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about House of Horses. It really stops being that. Like Somber seems to hit a crutch where he realizes that, like, okay, if I want to do the things I have interesting set pieces in my head, or at least what he thinks are interesting set pieces, I have to break the rules of the setting consistently to do so. And part of that is creating an incredibly elaborate combination of plot points that allows it so that my main character, despite being a quadrupedal horse, can have a sword fight without them just using their telekinesis. And that's where we got to now. We are not quite at, like, Metal Gear Solid, like, or sorry, Metal Gear Rising Rules of Nature fighting a mecha, but, like, we're getting there. So it's one of those things where it's I think this is a cool fight, but it bodes poorly for the rest of the series after this, because this is a critical break of rules. Not even like rules, I don't want to call them, just like shorthands of this particular universe, that regardless of how post-apocalyptic Fallout the story, like the original story was, it never broke the rule of them still being horses, but we've run into the crutch of like the cricks of now, no, we have to break that rule for me to have this cool dumb anime fight, and that means going forwards that rule no longer matters. And it just gets dumber and dumber and dumber.
Yeah, so it's anthropoid cyborg with a horse head versus a manticore also with a horse head.
Yeah, it's the they killed Superman problem of like once you do that and you bring him back with relative ease, you've now ruined the concept of superhero death. Like you have set the tone for the rest of everything else going forward. So even if that scene is particularly cool, it doesn't matter in the broader scheme, and that's part of the problem. Is this just devolves more and more into dumb anime? But regardless, they fight pretty even keel for a while. It's still a fun fight regardless. Rampage falls out of a air duct onto a manticore that's slowly menacing BJ in this fight. 21 is also there. It's also important to remember that Rampage is a small child right now, again, because she got vaporized in the previous chapter.
Oh, okay.
She's tiny little baby Rampage. She's Rampage, the tiny baby Rampage. Which is like the Toyotic version, I guess. But yeah, they finish off Brass and kill the big manticore, like her big guard manticore, I guess. It's a big old fight. But yeah, they have the cool off on that fight. 21 takes some drugs to remind us that he now has a medics, a painkiller addiction. Fucking BJ fucking holds onto the idiot ball long enough so that Dr. Baby Murderer can give her a crash course on chemical dependency. Because, like, Blackjack's like, I don't get it, it doesn't really matter. And like, Glory explained this already, that you had, like, if you take too many drugs, you'll get drug dependencies very easily, especially depending on the kind of drug. Like, how are you this dumb? And it's just so that, like, we can restate the concept of chemical dependency, which, like, I don't think an audience needs reiterated to them like that. So Blackjack is just dumb for no reason in this scene.
The concept of addiction is lore now.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, you don't need to, like, keep reiterating it, but yeah.
No, I'm saying that they do, because it is now a component of lore.
Mm, yeah, and you need lore constantly reiterated.
And I guess in Somber's like mind, never mind. I don't know that I have a complete thought there.
That's fair.
What happens
next? The crew wanders through some more building, like more of the building, because they've actually gotten into like the actual building proper that they're looking through, and they're finding a whole bunch of weird technology that they don't understand. Luckily, they have some helpful tutorial ghosts that show up to explain what's going, like what these things are.
Oh, I'm Clippy the Ghost Horse. Look at my paperclip
flame. It's Cloppy the Ghost Horse.
I see that you're trying to explore.
Explore an evil death machine. But they get a tutorial. They get explained. They find like a big. They find a room that I got incredibly mad about when it dawned on me what this actually is. They find like a mega spell room where like in one of the very rare cases of so the, like it's important to remember that the setting is a weird Arcanotech setting. So sometimes like
technology isn't one for one obvious what it is. So they find this room that has this weird, like, it's like machinery that extends into this weird golden tree, or they describe it like a tree, but it like has like parts on it that have like budding, what looks like budding fruit on it. And the tutorial ghosts give them the helpful explanation that this is the copy room, which you put genetic material into it, and like the budding like fruits will like clone an entire horse based off that genetic material. And also, if you just run the system without any genetic material in it, it'll just create blanks, which is what they've been finding. Just sort of around in the building is these blank horses that have no genetic material.
That's not how, whatever.
That's not how any of this works.
Again, that's precisely how magic works.
I was going to say, like, it's magic. Just, like, it's important to remember that setting is magic. It's,
you know, that's just why, like, yeah. So, and then?
Well, the thing, I think that's super cool. Like, to have actual Arcano tech stuff in it, but I'm a mark for that kind of stuff. But I got super mad about this thing because it's part of a later plot point that comes up chapters later that's infuriating. So don't worry about it. But,
I mean, it's almost interesting. Like, I guess it could be read as like a play on the way horses work in My Little Pony, because they're fundamentally to sell a toy that is all of basically the same mold, with different that is churned out with different dyes in the plastic and different hair plugins. So I guess it makes sense within the like context of the anatomy of tiny cute friendship horses that like you could magically produce a horse that is just a default template without.
Yeah, this is just an unpainted horse.
This is the injection mold
from
which all horses derive.
So I don't think it was I definitely don't think it was that. I think it was just to have a cool imagery thing. Because, like, I don't know. I think to a certain degree, like, I can argue that sometimes you just have to have cool things in your story that are aesthetically interesting looking. And I like... And I will defend this particular area of the story in that at least there's, like, descriptions of visually interesting technology that feels like it's a weird, nightmarish, arcanotech future stuff. Because this story has really suffered from the problem of just, like... technology is just technology. Like, it's just like guns are just guns and cars are just cars and trains are just trains. Like, there's nothing in a universe where horses are magical and you make and technology is made out of magic crystals that hold lightning and stuff. Like, there isn't enough actual evidence of that, and it's just it's all utilitarian, and that's kind of boring. So it's cool to have something like this, and in a certain way, in a certain aesthetic decision of most technology that's come across that's normal looks like what we'd consider mundane technology. And then, like, the really crazy technologically out there stuff is, like, really weird arcanotech stuff is a neat, artistic decision, I guess. Even if it doesn't necessarily make sense. It's going to be my one thing I like in this chapter. Somber did a one good.
So what's
good.
The mind-numbing reveal besides this is a exquisite plot device to bring back virtually any dead character?
This just gets sidetracked by Rampage slipping into another personality pointlessly. We learn of one of her many, many brain mates named Razorwire, who worked for the Ministry of Morale, so Pinkie Pie's, like, organization, and she got sold out by Pinkie Pie, I guess, and that's just the whole thing. It's just a foreshadow when they go to the prison later in the story, stuff to do with that. But they also come to the realization with this, like, cloning machine that... because the explanation given with the cloning machine of, like, why they were using it was the only way to make... they can't clone organs separately, so the way that they were making organs for people in the past was cloning entire bodies and then dissecting the organs out of them for people. And the plan is that, well, Scotch's lungs are now dead, and we need to fix that, so maybe we can, like, activate Project Chimera and fix Scotch with this. Which was the thing they were explicitly against doing with Blackjack, because Blackjack insisted that we can't give him the technology for Chimera, because that would be too dangerous to let anyone activate it. But I guess that's just out the window now that it's a different character.
Oh, no, now that the power is in our hands, it's fine.
Now it's in the right hands, you mean?
Yeah.
Now it can be activated safely.
Just like the Burtmern. Remember when Burtmern had to fight the Jokester?
And he had a machine.
And he violated, like, everyone's civil rights, but it was okay because he was Burtmern.
Yes. Because Batman's cool and he has the sensibility to destroy the technology after it's used. There's another really cool, crazy Arcanotech thing when they get to, like, the final boss arena, essentially, where, like, they get to where Project Chimera is, and there's this, like, giant empty room that has all these, like, piping that goes into a central tower that is equal parts to, like, technological like systems, like computer systems, are hooked into this giant, like, featureless, like, basically it's one smooth pillar of silvery material that all this piping is coming out of, that looks really really inorganic and alien. And then there's just a bunch of walkways up in this big circular dome empty building. It's a really cool, again, cool, brutal aesthetic look thing for your weird tech room. But they sneak up on Sanguine and Sci-Shy, who are desperately trying to get the Project Chimera working. And this becomes infuriating, because we then find out that none of this ever mattered, because we get told through Sanguine that Sci-Shy should be able to activate this thing, and he doesn't understand why she can't. And she tells him that she's seeing this skeleton horse. It's telling her that she can't access this this program, as is mocking her and telling her all the ways that she's going to get killed by Blackjack. So we know that we now know that the program carries the skeleton horse with it, and it's not just Blackjack's crazy. But it also means that this never mattered. This whole plot point of the Pip-Buck being stolen never mattered, because,
I mean, isn't that what I said? Like, I mentioned that last week, that, like, yeah, congrats, you got a program that is only accessible by someone of a very specific bloodline.
No, and, like, it's worse than that. It's not. She has the bloodline, because I'm about to explain that in a bit.
Oh, no.
It's just that the skeleton horse just also is the ultimate authority on the program, so it never mattered.
What a fucked up you are! What a...
So you not only do you need to be the bloodline chosen one, you also have to be specifically handpicked by the guardian of the Pip-Buck to access the program. So it never mattered.
Who the fuck programmed this UI? This is the most abusive, least helpful UI anyone has ever...
It's like if Clippy showed up and called you a cuck. Like,
yeah, it would be if Clippy were, like, an alt-right skull with, like, smoking eyes, and called you a cuck. Like, well, now, partner, I see you're trying to use this here program. Fuck you. Die. No, actually, don't die, because, like,
then I'll die. But yeah, oh man, every revelation.
But feel bad about yourself.
Every revelation about Skeleton Horse is the worst.
Fucking Skeleton Horse. Your Skeleton Horse is so bad now that he's the best. He's so stupidly awful.
He's looped back around to being the greatest for you.
Yes, actually.
Oh, well, get ready.
Oh my god! Actually, like, the implication of, like, this AI is that, like, they've programmed this profound asshole who is also a bloodline essentialist. Like, that sort of incest, like, an AI that refuses to acknowledge anybody but of a certain bloodline, that inevitably, no wonder he's a Confederate piece of shit.
my favorite part about it, though, is it's also an AI that just decided to be a cowboy skeleton. Like, it didn't... Nothing about it needed to be a cowboy skeleton. It just decided to, of its own free will.
It's the bloodline essentialism you put in there. Like, of course, like it's become increasingly reactionary as it's as it runs processing cycles and develops a sense of self. It's a fucking chud, and moreover, it's been setting up to be ideally suited for a fucking cop.
Yep.
And those fucking cops love skeletons.
Yes, they love skulls.
Yeah, they're super, super into skulls and abuse. So.
It's perfect. The ultimate weapon. The ultimate skeleton.
So, like, key. Yeah, no, it's a skeleton horse because it's imprinted on the douchebag who picked it up. Like,
it's perfect. It's genius. Anyways, unfortunately, they fight for a while, and it isn't terribly exciting. They fight a bunch of the griffins that are there, until the griffins just quit, basically. Like, they're on loan from Red Eye, and they're only working for Sanguine as long as Sanguine, can produce the goods. And they basically just go, like, oh, yeah, the thing we needed, which was Twilight's notes, because they needed them for they're trying to make their own alicorns. It's part of the main story. Don't worry about it. They basically go, like, oh, yeah, they cracked the code, so we don't need you anymore, so bye. And they just fly away from the story, never to appear again.
Wait, okay. Run that shit by me again. So the
griffins that were protecting, that were part of the bodyguard squad for Sanguine, just decide, like, basically just when it's quitting time. And they just went away.
So why have they say if they've analyzed the Maltese.exe?
No. It's much stupider. Much stupider than that. What the specific thing that they needed Sanguine for is part of a really complicated plot in the original FOE that is too long to explain. But they needed access to Twilight's notes, which were encoded, and they knew that Sanguine could get access to them. And he has been stalling for so long that they just got a different codebreaker to crack the notes outside of.
Okay, so we've just received a transmission. The thing that we needed you for has been done. This is your pink slip. This is the notice of a layoff. Goodbye. Good luck with the people trying to murder you.
Yeah, and then you just fly away. Which I almost kind of love. Like,
no, that is, like, I have to give credit, almost credit, half credit. Like, I'm so burnt that, like, I have to think that any good idea at this point coming out of Somber is an accident.
You get half credit on these griffins just noping away.
Just fucking, yeah.
Quitting time, boss. Later. So you can't leave. Well, speak to my union rep. I'm going home. I have baby birds to feed. But anyways, they fight Sanguine for a while. He still provides himself to be kind of a tough customer because cloud ghouls are virtually immortal. They're not, like, actually immortal, but you have to cut them apart to kill them. They can't, like, it's Highlander rules, basically. You have to cut their heads off to kill them. Otherwise, they'll just regenerate in anything you shoot at them. So, like, bullets are basically useless against them. Blunt weapons are basically useless against them. And also, they can breathe out cloud that fucks up your molecular structure. So, they're even the dumbest, most moronic cloud ghoul is still a tough customer. Just a tough customer. Like,
good thing we've got a telekinetic with a katana.
Yes. But they fight Sanguine for a while. Sanguine does the dumb villain thing of, like, he's like, oh, I never wanted to do this. You pushed me into doing this. I just wanted the program. You could have just let me have the program and I could have saved my family. And they're like, wait, you have a family? And he reveals his dumb, stupid, sad backstory, in the throes of this fight that him and his family were going to Canterlot, the capital city, when the bombs hit. And that city got bombed by the pink cloud biological agent. It fucked him up into a cloud ghoul, but it fucked up his family in a way that they weren't gonna, like, not as bad as him, but they were still dying. So he threw them into stasis, and he's been trying to solve their stasis for 200 years, basically. Like, he's been trying to fix them. And he basically, we get revealed that he's been bumblefucking his entire way through the story for 3 books now. Like, all of the villains that he created and all of the monsters that he created was entirely by accident, because the stasis pods are broken and don't give good readouts. So he's been, like, unlocking random fuckers and just, like, it's like, oh, you're a giant monster horse. I'll just send you to the Reapers or whatever. And, or, like, I don't like this recontextualization because it makes this character softer for no reason. But at the same time, there's something hilarious to me about this, like, it's like, oh, we're going to take down this evil mad scientist. And he's just like, I'm an idiot and I've been fucking up this entire time. What are you talking about, mad scientist?
I'm discount Mr. Freeze.
Yes.
Like, I'm Mr. Freeze, but it turns out I don't actually have any scientific background or education. I'm pressing random buttons.
So he's still a doctor, but like he doesn't have like the pure technical know-how to be able to fix the like, I guess, like, I like, I'm giving too much credit, but I kind of like the idea that, like, well, I'm a doctor, not an engineer, so I don't know how to fix the stasis pods. Like, they're just breaking and I need to fix that.
Also, like, a myopic monster, like, it is like, yeah, no, it feels like Sombra is trying to humanize him and give him like a tragic motivation, but it's hard to give a shit given the, like, carnage that he has unleashed on the world. Like, okay, so in the process of trying to save 2 people, you've killed in really spectacularly awful ways upward of 100 or more.
Yes, to do so. You effectively killed all of Stela 99 and also killed, like, everyone in that, like, liberated slave town, like, just and a bunch of other places just for to get Blackjack's attention. I got a mosey because we got other things to be mad at.
You're a monster. You probably beat your wife and kid.
Yeah,
they're better off dead.
I mean, his specific sticking point is like, I just want to fix my family. I don't care. And we do get a bit of that in the next chapter, which I'm glad of. What happens now is Sci-Shy drops a shipping container on his back because she goes all. I thought we were supposed to be a family. I thought, you know, we were like, what's this shit about this other family that you have? And of course, since Sanguine has gone full bad guy mode, he's like, I never cared about you. I never loved you. I was just using you. So Sci-Shy has lost all her motivation to be a bad guy now too. 21 does the first proactive thing he's done in the entire story, where he's like, oh, cool, we beat the bad guy. Okay, give me a second. And just pulls the pen on a grenade and puts it in his mouth. And he's like, all right, cool. All right, that seems finished. But to anyone, like, BJ has to talk him down from it. And this is so much more about the idea that, like, well, we need to let him save his family because his family's innocent and whatever. That's all he wants to do, and we can just hold him at gunpoint to save his family. But, like, I much prefer the far more pragmatic the thing that Blackjack says, that, like, we need him to fix Scotch, and that's like, we can just do that and kill him later. And I like that kind of more pragmatic, like, okay, revenge is important or whatever, but, like, also he can just fix one of our friends right away, right now, and also your daughter. Like, she leans a lot on that. And then we can always kill him after that. But so that becomes their decision, is they're going to activate Project Chimera, get him to do whatever they need to do, and solve it. And it makes it sound like I'm about to wrap up the chapter, because I am. But we get 2 stupid fucking bomb drops before that. One of them being they ask, like, okay, so, like, how can Sci-Shy activate it? Like, they just immediately assume clone, because, you know, you saw that cloning vat earlier. But no, Sanguine reveals that, in fact, actually, Psycho-Shy was Fluttershy's daughter the entire time. Remember how there was that big chapters ago, there was like a big abortion plot line where Fluttershy miscarried, and she was very distraught about that. She was carrying Golden Blood's kid. So Psycho Shy is the fucking villain self-inserts daughter, and also the one of the most important figures in the government's daughter as well. So you know, that's cool. You know we're talking about, why didn't they just kill her?
My teeth feel numb.
I was going to say you're going to be really mad about this chapter. But remember I said, they couldn't do anything to her last chapter? That's why. We haven't gotten this reveal yet. It's just more bloodline essentialism. She's also special. That's why she can't die.
Fi.
Yeah?
My bones are cold.
It's
a warm room I'm sitting in, and all of my bones are cold.
And you're a jukebox. That's really weird.
An icy rage flowing through me.
Can we put a pin on that for just 2 seconds while I finish up the chapter then?
Okay.
So the only other thing that we get is we get more, we get explained this because this building, this room is filled with explosives and they couldn't figure out why. And they get told by True Blood / Sanguine that it was for whatever, for a containment breach. And luckily we also get the ghost horses getting to this scene and explaining what's inside the casket, what's inside the sarcophagus pillar thing, which I could explain, but I'm going to leave it up to next chapter to talk about what's revealed inside of it, because that way we actually get some suspense and it doesn't just get spoiled in this chapter for no reason like it does in the actual thing. But that's the end of our chapter, is getting to find out what's inside that pillar, and we'll find out next week. So, what are your thoughts on...
So, if I had... If somebody wrote that, and I was in the same room with them, and they, passed it over to me and asked me, they asked me to read it, tell me what they thought.
Yes.
I would do so. And I got to the end, or at least got to that part about the secret origins of Psycho Shy.
Mm-hmm.
I would, in reply, I would take one of those fold tables, one of those sort of couch side TV tables. I would open it up in front of them. I would sit down in front of them, and I'd almost like the beginnings of a magic trick. I forget the exact term for it, but I would show them a piece of blank paper, reveal, show both sides, lay it on the table, and I would begin folding it into one of those paper slapsticks that creates a loud noise when you whack somebody with it, and I would then begin pummeling Somber with it, just relentlessly. Over the course of about 90 minutes, just like, and feverishly, he would be forced to flee the building we were occupying. I would chase him down the street, flap, 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 just continuously, and manically. I would have no self-control past a certain point. I would, just in a rage trance, flap, 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 flap. Hard as I could with the slapstick, so that I would not meaningfully, physically injure him, merely shame, confuse, and frighten him as I pursued him down the road.
Yep, that sounds about right. That sounds about accurate. I think...
I can't... Yeah.
You can't even...
What do you think? What do you think? Let's hear...
Yeah, I was going to say, I think... So, I know... I think this was planned all along, which I think is the worst part. There is a massive amount of backstory given to the whole, so to roll back, I've talked about this before, but Golden Blood is not in the original story. He's a complete self-insert fanfic made-up thing. And which means his whole relationship with Fluttershy in the story isn't real. Like I've complained about it before from the lens and context of its disgusting diminishing of LGBT characters within in a fic, but because Fluttershy and Rarity are kind of a thing in the original story, but really very very early on is these twin situations of two different characters, one having a miscarriage and the other one essentially having a like. What's it called? The term when you like someone a surrogate birth, and both of those having big destiny things to them. Like, so we never up until this point we did not know that Blackjack's daughter like lived through the miscarriage because we get told like this gets recontextualized in this that the miscarriage thing was a big lie, a big false front, because. Because the thing that was established with Twilight was that like a birth, like a childbirth, was simultaneously a big scandal and a massive security risk because of the way bypass spells work. So like the mares were discouraged from having kids, not necessarily outright banned from it, but discouraged from. Shouldn't matter for a bunch of them because they were gay anyways. But. In
for the listener, I am my hands are doing their best to rip the scalp from my head as Fi explains this.
So just
a visual
white knuckle rage. But my point on all of this is that this is all the worst thing ever in a bunch of ways that is unfun. But its primary issue is that this is a meme character for the first point. And like Sakushai is insufferable but in a kind of fun way in the first couple of chapters she's in, because she's introduced as this big annoying brat who is like kinda too dangerous to really take on by themselves, but Blackjack still, you know, chafes against her and there's kind of a fun interplay with her. But this weird recontextualization of her being one of the single most important members of the...
Yeah, no, it also goes to explain post-talk, oh, this is why she's so upsold. This is why she gets such a work.
She got so much heat. Yeah.
Yeah, this is why the management is giving her so much ridiculous, a push. That's the term. This is why she gets such an insane push that the entire cast has a job for her.
Yes.
Inexplicably, is that she is a meme the author really likes and has like wound up becoming emotionally attached to, because he has developed a headcanon wherein she is the daughter of his direct self-insert and his preferred waifu.
Yes. I would make the judgment call, though, that I think she was always that and was never anything. Like, I don't think he came to the decision eventually. I think that she was planned from the get-go.
No, I think before writing this story, he developed this headcanon.
Okay.
Psycho Shy as a distinct character from Fluttershy, and not like a conception of a mode that Fluttershy exists in. Like, Psycho Shy is my daughter. Fluttershy is my waifu. And Psycho Shy is the baby we would have, because I am so edgy and angry inside that like this would totally be a reflection of my daughter with my waifu.
Yeah.
And as long as I'm writing the story, I will insert the love child I imagine I would have with my horse waifu.
Yeah, it's important to note too that Somber has like a lot of like baggage when it comes to like babies and kids in these kinds of stories, of like people having them as part of their relationships. So like it feels like it was something that was needed to happen Like, it's like, well, I can't just have my character have a relationship with this girl. She also has to have a daughter that I then take care of. Because, like, that's part of my whole fantasy, is also having the, like, the, yeah, the whole traditional family. Yeah, that's going to get really frustrating in a few chapters. Can't wait till I get to talk about how Sombra doesn't understand polyamory.
Because it flies in the face of property rights, like, you
can't. Yeah.
Gross. All right, I think I'm coming down. Even though it was a cult, like, it was like a, my heart rate didn't increase any at all. In fact, I think it stopped beating.
We're gonna have to get you a new clone heart to fix in your jukebox. That's the problem.
We can say that within the confines of the K-fab that I am a deeply delusional jukebox, as evidenced by my royal titles.
There's something amusing to me about the idea that you're a jukebox filled with organs.
I have acquired them over time. I once sought to be a real boy, and though I've given up on that hobby, I still keep around the guts to.
Yeah, you're like a weird better times. You're like a weird half bicentennial man, where you're a robot full of organs, and they work. Like, you can eat and digest and have organs, but, like, there's no reason to. Oh, that's nightmarish. Oh, that's very, very, very apocalyptic. I like it.
And thusly true.
Yep. But yeah, and that, is there anything better we could be reading, Weird?
Oh, fuck. Is there? I could swear that I was entertained by some piece of media recently. Go watch the 90s Addams Family movie again. Some recent memes have called my attention back again to the fact that Gomez and Morticia are universal relationship goals.
They are, in fact, the perfect couple.
Yeah, so wash this fucking, like, incredibly masturbatory, like, so masturbatory, Psycho Shy is literally jizz on the page. By going and watching a inexplicable film classic of the 1990s, the Addams Family, especially because in anticipation of being very disappointed by Illumination's take on the property.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. Ugh.
I guess another thing. I was surprised to find out a friend of mine didn't know about Savage Worlds. So here's sort of an anecdote, fun thing to fill a little bit of airtime that also counts as a sort of a recommendation. So I've been writing up a D&D campaign for some friends that I've been planning to codify, and along with a bunch of miniatures that I'm making for it, sell it. After talking with some people, I realized that, like, why am I making for this for D&D? D&D does not do any of the things that I like well, any of the things I want or need for this campaign. But you know what does do a pretty good job? Savage Worlds. Savage Worlds is an RPG by Pinnacle Press?
I believe so, yeah.
That is a rootin' tootin' rip snortin' pulp adventure game. It's a sort of a generic system. It's very much kind of in the model of GURPS, but whereas GURPS attempts to be hyper-simulationist and is thus incredibly fiddly and often difficult and boring, Savage Worlds aims to be one thing precisely. It simulates pulp action adventure.
Yes.
Is simple, straightforward. It's quick to build characters. And has kind of a fun dice mechanic that's not dissimilar from Cortex, if any of you have ever heard of that. Most of your stats are measured in die size rather than pluses and minuses.
Yeah, it's an interesting, weird sort of, like, quirk of the system.
The plug for this week is instead of reading
Project Horizons. Instead of reading fanfic of a fanfic, that turns out to be wankier than I could ever possibly imagined.
Yes.
Like, it's pretty wanky to do a fanfic of a fanfic, but man, Somber is a pioneer, is an innovator.
Well, I've given a couple of recommendations before that kind of countermanded the idea that, like, you can do a fanfic or fanfic that's still, like, interesting and engaging. It's just, this ain't. Boy, yeah. This ain't.
So yeah, play Savage Worlds. I think that if your local friendly game store has it, it's like $10 for the core book, and then like it has a whole bunch of splats for a whole bunch of different intellectual properties.
Yeah, eventually I'm gonna get around to running Necessary Evil in it, so that'll be fun.
Hey, if you've ever wanted to play Rifts, it is now possible, it is now feasible for human beings to play. Because it has a series of supplements in Savage Worlds.
Yeah, we're running kind of long, so I think we're gonna go over to... Yeah, so Savage Worlds, that's the recommendation. You can also, if you want to contact us for any reasons, you can check us out at thou art5 for me, or at WeirdingtonE. For Weird, WeirdingtonESQ @gmail.com if you want to email us directly.
And I recommend it. Like,
yeah.
Send us recommendations for other stuff that people could be reading. And also a quick note, because somebody brought it up, I think we do need to put in the caveat, the Surgeon General warning. Do not read Somber's writing.
Yeah.
Don't.
Yeah,
we had
a scare about that. But yeah, otherwise, also consider donating to Weird's Ko-Fi for one-time donations, and we will, by the end of this, we've been kind of like stalling on the Patreon because we need to get something set up for bonus episodes. But in this month, we'll definitely have something of a bonus episode, which will probably be at like a $4 or $5 tier that people can pay into for bonus episodes and content for any bevy of things. As Weird as suggested, I still push for the doing a live play game.
Reading of. Recording ourselves attempting to gin characters in, and then gathering up a bunch of poor, foolish lost souls to run at least a one shot,
and then just saying fuck it and playing Apocalypse World, Savage Worlds, and doing the exact same thing.
Yeah,
the joke here, if anyone's never seen the Fallout Equestria tabletop game, is it's hilariously draconian and nonsensical. It is so overblown and over designed to be basically unplayable, but you can. It exists.
Yeah, the amount of pain that this is going to cause me, and the by extension, the amount of amusement I'm sure it'll generate for you, just goes to show that this entire project was all a terrible mistake.